Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Do we really know what happened? We're both into like true crimes.
That's gonna be our theme song. It'll be just a silent recording of me going, ooh, and it'll be flat and out of tune every time.
That's good. This is mystery murdery thingy.
Hey y'all.
What's up?
Why did you just tell me why you decided to enter our podcast with a what's up?
Because that's how I greet people, isn't that? How everyone talks?
No.
Ever since Scary Movie came out?
No.
I know.
Oh,
I have.
Oh yeah.
What's that?
That was I remember that part.
That movie was not good.
Scary Movie 3?
No, just Scary Movie.
Scary Movie 3 was the best one.
I did not get that far.
Well,
in the Scary Movie franchise tree.
Well, we're gonna watch it. We're gonna watch it.
Great.
Cause Anna Faris is in it.
Anna Faris?
Ah! Shut up.
Okay.
So, what are we talking about today? What episode is this? 4?
This is episode 4 of Mystery Murdery Thingy.
Welcome.
I'm Mario.
My name is Chloe. And basically, we talk about things that are unsolved.
Mysterious.
Mysterious.
Ooh.
It could be mysterious phenomena, maybe murders.
Right.
Legends.
Weird sounds.
Just weird stuff.
The weirdest.
Weird stuff that's going around.
We're on iTunes.
And we are on iTunes. Please subscribe. Please rate. That'd be so cool.
And leave us a note.
Leave us a note.
Let us know if you think we're doing great.
If you think we're doing bad.
Oh, yeah, that too.
You're allowed to express your opinion in America.
Any opinion that
you can say whatever you want.
That's what we love about America.
And just make sure it's constructive.
We don't give a shit.
That's
what I love about America.
Fuck with you.
So, last
little
time.
Little stupid ass bitch, I'm okay. Fucking with okay. You.
Okay. settle down there, boy. So, last time I made a couple of pretty big blunders.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to do corrections at the beginning. So, Joseph Smith is the founder of Mormonism, or Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, whatever. Not John Smith.
Joseph Smith. American Moses.
Right. So, I kept saying John Smith, which is not correct. I also kept saying that Melanesia, etc., were west of Australia, which is the opposite of correct. They are definitely east of Australia. So, in case you were wondering about that stuff. Okay, that was my corrections. And Chloe was perfect, as far as we can remember. So, let us know.
We're just going to leave it at that.
Yes, Chloe's always perfect.
Stop.
Yes. So who should go first this week? I'm talking about North Korean ghost ships.
Okay,
kind of creepy, but not murdery.
So that's a mystery thingy.
Yeah, mystery thingy.
I'm also doing a mystery thingy.
Okay. Well, I'll just go first.
We're doing a face-off? I don't know. Okay.
Oh, okay.
You go first.
I had no idea what you were doing.
Should we do rock, paper, scissors?
No, you go first. I'll just go first.
Okay. So tell us what you're talking about again.
I am talking about North Korean ghost ships. So for at least since 2011, because that's as far back as the Japanese.
Wait, I'm sorry to interrupt. But I just want to talk about how my boss, back when I worked at the restaurant, one time he tried to convince me that North Korea had submarines off the coast of Florida and off the coast of California. And he was like really serious.
Wow. So he was kind of a conspiracy theorist.
I was just like nodding and smiling.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I just...
Of course they do.
Okay, sorry, keep going. That just reminded me of that.
People do find Russian submarines in weird places.
Well, that makes sense.
That's
today,
for sure.
Today, Twitter is going to tell its users if they were
interacting
with a Russian bot.
Right, right.
Of the Kremlin.
I'm glad they're doing something.
Right.
You know, I mean...
Okay, keep going. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's okay. So, North Korean ghost ships. So, like I said, since 2011, the Japanese Coast Guard has been documenting this weird occurrence that keeps happening. Apparently, dozens of them are found along the Japanese shore every year. But it depends a lot on the year, and we'll kind of get into that list of it in a little bit. They think that... So the mystery of it is, you know, what happened to these people? You know, why do they keep all these North Koreans keep dying out in the high seas, you know, in the Sea of... I think it's the Sea of Japan, between Korea and Japan. Is it because they are, like, defectors from North Korea and they're, like, trying to get away? Or is it just that they're, like, fishermen who get lost at sea? It's like, really not entirely clear. But, you know, fishing is, like, a really dangerous enterprise. You know, if you've ever seen, like, what's that show they have? Like, Alaskan salmon fishermen.
Shrimp. I don't know.
Crazy.
It's, like, really intense.
Yeah, I don't understand it. But apparently, if you do it, you can work for, like, 3 months out of the year. Now, you might die. It's not a, you know, terrible chance you're going to be deceased afterwards. But your family would probably get a pretty good payout. So, that's pretty cool. I don't think that's how it works in North Korea. From what I was reading, it sounds like pretty much if they're kind of, like, low on fishermen and, like, low on money and whatever, Kim Jong-un just basically tells, like, army people, like, you're gonna go out and fish. But it's, like, these... And I watched a video from CNN. These really rickety, old wooden boats that, like... do not look seaworthy and are not modern in any way. Like, I don't think they even have, like, power motors or anything. So this is probably part of why that's happening, right? Old boats, probably not very much food on the boats. These tend to happen more in the wintertime. So apparently there's, like, seasonal winds that are blowing from North Korea to Japan. So just to kind of get into, like, the numbers, because I think that's kind of, like, the one of the weirdest parts of it, is just how many of these there are.
There's a lot?
There are a lot.
That's so,
so
bizarre.
Like I said, the Japanese Coast Guard only started keeping track in 2011. So in 2011, there were 57, and then over the next several years, there were 47, 80, 65, 34, 24 in 2016, but then 104... in 2017. So it just, like, went up basically, like, 4.5 times from 2016 to 2017.
Well.
And it's really not clear why. I mean, I guess you could say, and some people have said, like, you know, more sanctions, and they're, like, you know, kind of more cash-strapped at that point. But I don't know. I'm not entirely sure, just because I don't know enough about the situation. I'm not sure anyone really knows about, you know, enough about the situation. Because North Korea's just so mysterious in and of itself. Like, very few Westerners go there. We really have very little idea of how the government works or, like, how people live. But not well. We know that. they're not living well because their government is terrible.
So was the interview accurate?
There wasn't an... Wait. The interview.
Are there murals of, like, grocery stores, but you go to it and it's, like, fake? Remember that part?
I do remember that part from the movie.
Do you think that's real?
The interview. No, I don't think that's
real. Yeah, I was going to say, that's
no,
makes sense.
I don't think so. So anyway, on these boats, a lot of the bodies that are found are, like, skeletal.
Ew.
Yeah, like, desiccated... just a skeleton, or sometimes, like, just a skull.
Ew.
Like, one of the ones that came on, that came up to the shore last year, had 31 bodies, including 8 skeletons in one boat. So, and they said, like...
dead bodies?
Yeah. Like, clearly they've been out there for, like, months and months and months, too. Like, that's the other thing, is, like, some of these have been... these people have been dead for, like, 6-7 months by the time they drift ashore onto the Japanese coast. And part of the reason why they know that they're from North Korea is the, like, lettering on the sides of the boats. Some of them have, like, North Korean military markings on the sides of the boats. So it's part of how they think that, like, it's basically soldiers who are getting, like, pushed into doing this, which to me suggests probably a lot of these people, and again, I'm, like, totally extrapolating here, but probably don't know how to fish. They probably don't know how to sail. Like, they're probably just getting, like, pushed out there and saying, like, go find the fish, but they don't know what they're doing.
Damn.
And they don't have much food or experience or anything, so they just end up dying on the high seas and drifting over to the coast of Japan and creeping the Japanese people out very severely. They've also found some, like, North Korean cigarettes and life jackets on the ships. And on another one that drifted over on January 16th of 2018, so, like, really, really recently. Like, one of them, like, just happened.
You mean 4 days ago?
Like, 4 days ago.
Oh, my God!
Like, literally 4 days ago, another one washed up onto central Japan. And there were 8 men on there, deceased, wearing badges that had Kim Il-sung, who was the founder of the, you know, the current North Korean regime back in whatever it was, the 40s or 50s or whatever it was. And his son, Kim Jong-il, who's the father of the current leader, Kim Jong-un. So basically, apparently everyone in North Korea has to wear these badges that, like, have the pictures of the leaders on them to show their, like, loyalty. And it's part of, like, the cult of personality, you know, around the Kims. And I think it's not entirely a coincidence that Japan started keeping track of this in 2011, and Kim Jong-un also took over in 2011. So I'm not, I mean, from what I was reading, this was happening beforehand, but I think maybe it kind of, like, accelerated.
It became noticeable enough that they were like, we should count this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, like I said, last year there were, like, over 100 of these. That's not over 100 bodies. That's over 100 boats. I mean, just imagine if you, like, say you're living on, like, the East Coast, right? You're, like, living near Boston Harbor, and just, like, every, like, couple of weeks, three boats, just, like, with dead bodies keep... I mean,
what?
I cannot imagine, like, what the psychological impact of those Japanese people is, like, that they have to keep reliving this weird experience of going out to a ghost ship, and, like, if there are real ghosts... I mean, you got to imagine that now, if there are real ghosts, I think one of the ways that they mitigate that is they apparently all the bodies, they, like, cremate them. They give them, like, a proper, like, Buddhist burial, because I guess that's the main religion in that where they came drifting to, I guess. I don't really know.
Okay.
So I think that helps to put the souls to rest. I'm not being patronized.
No, sorry.
You're just, like, looking at me like I'm...
Well, no. I just... You said if, and I, like, thoroughly believe that there are ghosts. No doubt about it.
I know. That's why you gave me that look. Oh. I could tell. Well, and speaking of that, I want at some point, I want my parents to record their ghost story.
Yes.
So hopefully we'll have that in a future episode.
Everybody has a ghost story.
Right, exactly. So these probably were not defectors. So it's like a possibility. And there have been a few times where, like, people trying to defect from North Korea to South Korea by boat have, like, drifted until they, like, got to Japan. Because they were just, like, totally off, right? So that has happened several times throughout the past few decades, but it's pretty rare. So, specifically this guy named John Nielsen Wright at Chatham House, which is like a think tank in London, thinks that they are not defectors, just basically because it's so much easier to get to South Korea. Although, I don't know if you heard about that, oh my god, it was crazy, that North Korean defector who recently ran across the DMZ, the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea.
Is a defector like a soldier?
Sometimes, yeah, but it doesn't have to be. It's just anyone who's leaving one country because they feel they're getting oppressed and going to a different country that they feel is, like, going to be better for them.
Okay.
But when this guy was a soldier, and he was actually, like, driving, you know, like, a Jeep or whatever, and it broke down, and then he just had to, like, start running across the border between North and South Korea, and some of his fellow soldiers, North Korean soldiers, saw him, and they started shooting at him, and I think he got shot, like, 5 or 6 times, and then they airlifted him out, and this army doctor did what's called a thorectomy or something like that. Basically, because this guy's lung had collapsed, he put, like, a tube, like, down, you know, to clear the airway, and apparently that's what saved his life.
Oh, he survived?
He survived. And they had to do, like, so many surgeries on him, and not only had he gotten shot, but he was riddled with parasites.
Ew!
Like, so many.
That's so gross.
I know. I can't.
Imagine being that nurse.
I know, right?
Ew.
Thanks.
Yeah.
But apparently this is something that they think happens because they use human feces as fertilizer.
Ew. Okay, so do they do autopsies on these bodies and figure out cause of death, or?
They do on the ones that they can. So a lot of them, like I said, are, like, skeletal by the time they get there. So obviously they can't really do an autopsy, you know, when they're so decomposed. But they have done autopsies, I think, on some of them. But it's really not conclusive. Like, they assume that they died from exposure or from starvation, but really no one knows exactly how they died or why this keeps happening. But, like I said, it's probably just that they're, like, being sent out there to, you know, whatever, fish, and they end up, just because the North Korean regime, like, doesn't care that much, right? Apparently. That's what it seems like, anyway. So, one other thing I wanted to mention, though, like, for these, from the perspective of these Japanese people, so in the 70s and 80s, apparently the North Korean government did send over spies on boats, and they abducted at least 17 Japanese citizens. Primarily, they said, to train North Korean spies. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Like, train them to speak Japanese, or, like, I don't really know. But that has happened before.
That's weird.
So that's something else that, like, the Japanese people are kind of, like, freaked out by. Like, you know, because there have been ones that showed up with people who were completely alive, too. That's rarer. But some of these, you know, ships that drift over aren't ghost ships because they actually have live people.
So what do those people say?
They don't say much. They don't.
Are they not allowed to, probably? Like,
oh,
they
yeah.
don't.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, my God.
And some of them end up getting sent back to North Korea because they basically, like, you know, they didn't mean to defect or anything. They just went the wrong way and ended up in Japan instead of back home, I guess.
Oh, my God.
So it's very mysterious.
So what do you think happened? What's your theory?
Right. I mean, basically what I said, that, you know, these are people who were pushed into trying to find fish and going out into the sea who, I mean, shit, if if somebody put me on a boat right now and told me to go find some fish for the dear leader, I wouldn't have any idea what I'm doing. I've barely been on a boat before. So I feel like that's what's happening. It's just like the combination of inexperience and the bad weather and the harsh conditions and the little food is just this recurring, you know, issue that they keep sending these people out and they keep dying and they keep ending up on the coast of Japan freaking people out.
So it's not like these like rogue North Korean soldiers who were like caught, and so they just send them on this ship and send them off with no supplies, no food, and that's their like punishment.
I mean, it definitely could be that too,
because that's what I was thinking.
I think that's plausible,
but there's so many though, that's the thing.
There are but you know, I think we've also recently found out that North Korea basically has like gulags, you know, like concentration camp type prisons for their own people. So I don't think anything is beyond this, you know, rogue regime up in the northern peninsula of Korea. So it definitely could be intentional. And of course, you know, the North Korean regime is not saying anything. So, yeah. Weird stuff. My sources.
Okay.
So I got a lot of stuff from Wikipedia, of course, from the North Korean ghost ship Wikipedia page.
God bless.
Right. Best thing that ever happened to the internet. Also from an article on Snopes.com by Kim LaCapria. From CNN, Junko Agura at CNN. Julian Ryle at The Telegraph. Jake Adelstein at The Daily Beast. Tim Hume at Vice News, and Samuel Osborne of The Independent. Yeah, doing their jobs, finding shit out so we can talk about it. Thank you, people.
Oh, my God.
So that was mine.
Yay!
Yeah.
You have way more sources than I do, as always. I just, like, do a lot of reading in one spot,
because
a million tabs at once stresses me out.
Okay. Right.
So you ready for this?
I am ready.
Aye, aye, Captain. I can't hear you.
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Okay, all right. It's just kind of funny because the one that I'm talking about is called The Lost Dutchman's Gold Mine. And if you recall, there is a character on SpongeBob called, he's like called the Dutchman. He's like a ghost.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I've seen that. Oh,
man, what's his name? It's like the something Dutchman or the Dutchman.
The Flying
something.
Dutchman?
The Flying Dutchman, that's what it is.
Well, because the Flying Dutchman is a famous ghost ship.
Oh.
Maybe that's one we can talk about in the future.
Okay. I didn't know that. Okay. Yay.
If you listen to Stuff You Missed in History Class, which is one of my favorite podcasts, they talk a lot about ghost ships. That's like one of their favorite topics is like shipwrecks and ghost ships. And anyway, that's a good one.
Okay. So, the first thing I noticed when, like, doing all this research is the amount of stories and lore behind this legend.
Okay.
So, it is located in, get this, the Superstition Mountains in central Arizona.
What is?
The Dutchman Gold Mine.
Oh,
the
okay.
Legend of the Dutchman Gold Mine.
We got off on the other thing, so I didn't catch that.
Okay, anyway. Yeah, it's a mysterious treasure that may or may not exist. And so, like, you know, anthropologists, treasure hunters, prospectors, conspiracy theorists, hikers, all these type of people all over the USA have tried to find it.
Mm.
And a striking amount of them end up dead or simply disappear. It's quite bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Yeah, like I said, because it's, like, such a legendary thing, there's a ton and ton of different stories and theories, and some of them seem way more believable than the others, and some of it I, like, only found that in one place and no other place said anything about that, but, yeah. Okay, so what I did was gather the ones that I liked, my favorite ones, and also the ones that are the most interesting and the ones that seem the most believable, and those are the ones I'll talk about. Then I'll talk about some of the people who disappeared or died, because those are crazy.
Cute.
So no one really knows the exact number of people who lost their lives or simply went missing in the mountains, but some say it's upwards of 600. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about 600, but there were definitely a lot of different cases that I read, and 20 plus of them are like proven deaths. Like they found remains and stuff. Lots of beheadings, which we'll talk about later. Not only were there tons of different cases, there were tons of different origin stories as to how the gold mine came to be and why it's so dangerous and mysterious. So here's some origin stories that I found. The Pima Indians are one of many local Native American tribes who inhabit the area. It's said that the Superstition Mountains get their name from an evil spirit that guards the treasure, and he only sleeps 4 hours a day. So the idea is to get in and get out while the evil spirit is sleeping. I found that at one place, and I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
I think that one's the least plausible. Okay. Another one is that the mountain itself is cursed, which I believe. And Native Americans believe that the entrance to the underworld was held within the mountains. And then, in the 1860s, there's a lot about this guy, too. A German man named Jacob Waltz, who they called the Dutchman, came to America in hope to find gold. He's also someone who could have originated, like, this whole story. So in this case, Waltz did, in fact, find a vein of gold, but he later grew very ill. And he gave the list of clues to his caregiver, a woman named Julia Thomas. She and others went searching for the treasure, but they were unsuccessful. They never found anything. And so they sold the map for $7, which in the 1860s, it's a little under $200 in today's money. So there are many versions of this story too. Sometimes it's told with both Jacob Waltz and another man named Jacob Weiser. And in most versions, the two men or one, like, however it's told, find the gold, and Weiser is attacked by either Native Americans or jealous Waltz, but he survives long enough to tell a man named Dr. Walker about the mine. And there is evidence of a real historical Jacob Waltz, who was a miner slash prospector in about 1848, and he has a grave in the Pioneer and Military Cemetery west of downtown Phoenix, and it's sometimes said that he wasn't very lucky when it came to mining, but others say that he periodically would show up with, like, amounts of gold. So there's kind of, like, a fluctuation in between that. The next one is the Dr. Thorne slash Apache gold theory, or story. It is said that the members of the Apache tribe had a gold mine in the mountains, but once a man named Miguel Peralta and his family discovered it, and they started to mine it, but they were attacked or massacred by the Apaches in 1850. This is what was called the Peralta Massacre. And there was a lot, that was a whole story in and of itself, and I didn't really get into it because it was basically stemmed from this basic story, was that they were attacked because they were mining gold that they didn't know wasn't theirs.
Sure.
So years later, a man called Dr. Thorne heals a wounded Apache member, some people say it was the chief, and he was rewarded with the treasure. The tribe blindfolded him, took him to the mountains, where he was allowed to take as much gold as he could carry, and Dr. Thorne was either unwilling or able to relocate the mine when they, like, asked him. And it's not entirely clear if he, like, came back rich or if he was, like, alive. It was just, it's all very mysterious.
Right.
And the next one is two U.S. Army soldiers find gold in the Superstition Mountains. They allegedly presented some of the gold, but they had vanished or were killed soon after. So I just thought that was interesting because it was connected to soldiers. So, like I said, there's lots of deaths, and I have some of those that I'm going to read. There's four. I picked four out of the, like, 30 plus that I could do. Yeah, it was crazy.
These are, like, the most interesting, or you said, like, the most kind of plausible.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like everything about this almost is, like, in flux, you know? Which totally makes sense to me, because the Western United States of the mid to late 19th century, not a great place for record keeping.
Yeah, for sure.
not a lot of good governance going on at that time, per se.
So, okay. The first one. Jesse Capon. He was a 35-year-old man who was obsessed with finding this treasure. And it was in 2009 that he went missing.
In 2009?
Yeah. In his apartment, they found, like, books and maps and hundreds of articles about the Superstition Mountains and all, and, like, the trails and, like, where the gold could be and all this stuff.
Mm.
And, according, like, they found this, and it apparently he had tried to find it two other times before, but he didn't tell anyone about it, which is both stupid and greedy. Like,
right.
You know, if you're going to go find gold, you're not going to be like, BRB, I might be rich.
Yeah. Don't follow me.
It'll turn into a national treasure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Nicolas
Cage... Or that show that my dad likes to watch about, like, some mysterious... What is it? Oak Island.
Mystery
of Oak Island.
Oh, my God.
One more person has to die before they can find it.
Oh!
It's on, like, TLC.
I have seen an episode of that. Okay, anyway. Yeah. Yeah, so he went off two times before. And without telling anyone about it, the Superstition Search and Rescue Team, which exists, which had been searching for Capon every weekend for 3 years, found his remains after 3 years. They said it was in a tight spot, 30 feet off the ground, and his official cause of death remains unknown.
So they don't think that he fell?
Well, they don't know. They think he might have fell into the crevice.
That's what I was thinking.
Or his remains were moved there somehow by just weather and
maybe
erosion.
Maybe a puma or something.
And yeah, animals. So the next one is, this is the most famous, and this is the one that I think really, it really got the ball rolling for these stories and this, like, lost Dutchman's mine thing to get going. So Dr. Adolf Ruth is his name. The death of Dr. Ruth was back in 1932, and it's what made the mountains famous. His death is the most well-known because it's kind of the creepiest. He set out on a two-week journey into the mountains back in June of 1931, and when he never came back, a rescue team went out to search for him, but they didn't find any remains. But later in the year, hikers... it found a skull, and then it was positively identified as Ruth's. But here's the thing. His skull had two bullet holes in it, and the anthropologist / doctor who looked at it, he said a lot of stuff about it, but the main thing he said was that it was either a shotgun or a high-powered rifle because, the entrance point was a small hole, and the exit point was enormous.
Right.
So... the rest of his remains were also found, including his own pistol, and it was still full of bullets. Like, there weren't any missing.
Hmm.
And I didn't understand. Maybe you can explain this to me. There were also metal pins found that were used to mend his broken bones. Is that a thing?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't know that they started that practice all the way back then. But, yeah, when there's a really severe break, sometimes it'll be necessary to put, like, a metal pin in the juncture between two bones to shore up that area, you know, basically to become a surrogate bone in a sense. And that's something that still happens up to today. Yeah.
Okay. They found those. But his map was gone.
Ooh. And it sounds like he was, like, waylaid or something. I mean, if he didn't have a chance to shoot back,
I know, right.
You know, it sounds like he was, like, come upon, you know, in the dead of night or something. That's what I would prefer. That's the scariest, most interesting thing to me.
But wait, there's more!
Okay.
Even creepier, they also found his checkbook with detailed instructions as to where to find the mine. He ended the note with the Latin phrase, Veni, Vidi, Vici. I say,
right.
I came, I saw, I conquered.
Right.
Isn't that weird?
That is strange.
Okay, so next. We have James A. Cravey. Back in the 40s, he is a 62-year-old treasure hunter, and he went in search of the gold, and there was a lot of hype about the treasure during this specific time, because it was, like, what is it now, about 8
plus years after Adolf Ruth, the doctor, died. So he landed in the desert via helicopter, and he began his 10-day trip. And of course, when the pilot landed, when he came back 10 days later, Kravy was nowhere to be seen. His camp was left intact, and 2 days' worth of food was missing. Even creepier, they found his decapitated body in the wilderness of the mountains, and it wasn't until 6 months later that they found his skull. No one knows why he was beheaded or who killed him.
So he was beheaded too?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
From 1955 to 1977, 5 people were found dead with bullet holes in their heads. Yeah. Two more bodies were found, also without heads, but their skulls were never recovered. So like I said, it's weird because there's a lot of beheadings. It's not like they just find these, like, skeleton people who could have, oh, they probably died of, you know, exposure, starvation, got lost. But it's, like, clear stuff that they were, like, attacked by something.
Shot in the head and then also decapitated. But also, like, many years apart.
Right?
So, I mean, you would think, okay, maybe there's some psychotic person living out in the woods in that area or something, right? But
mm-hmm.
it seems kind of unlikely that they would have been doing this, like, for 30 years, you know, continuously.
It's crazy. The next one, I think this is my last one. Yeah, it's my last one. James Kidd. James Kidd vanished December 29th, 1949. He wasn't just another man to vanish into the mountains. This guy's really interesting. He had a very odd life. He didn't have many friends or family, and few people knew anything about him. And his disappearance wasn't that important until 25 years later when it was discovered that he left behind $500,000 in fortune. So, remember, this is 1949, so
right.
That's a lot of money.
Right.
And what they say is that he made his money by investing in the stock market, but the source to those investments is a total mystery. And he was a prospector, and he did a lot of mining on his own, so it's sometimes believed that he had, like, a stash of gold somewhere, and that, like, he took it when he needed it and used that to invest and stuff like that. And there's I could go on about this guy. There's also a ton of weird stuff about him. Like, there's lots of different theories and stories, but most being that he was murdered for his fortune, and it was never found. But what was most noticeable about his interest was his interest in the supernatural. His will stated that the fortune can go to anyone who proves that visual ghosts exist, and his remains have never been found.
I feel like that's going to be your will.
Okay.
Someday.
No. But I also read more about him. I didn't write this down because it was a lot, but the Lost Dutchman goldmine.com, I got his story from, and the author, I don't think his name was ever up there, but he was talking about how he had these, like, sources of people who knew this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, their stories have died with them. And
right.
So there was one that said, like, James Kidd was, like, dying of cancer. And so he asked his friend to, like, drop him off in the mountains and, like, let him stay out there and, like, to come back and check on him every couple weeks. And he was getting worse and worse every couple weeks. And this guy was like, you need to come back. And he, like, refused. And then one day they, like, found him dead.
Mm.
But he wanted to keep his death a secret and his fortune a secret.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's been, like, covered by all this, but I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. So yeah, Wikipedia and Ranker has, like, this whole graveyard shift area of their, like, website.
Ranker is a great
It's
website.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And the article was written by Lyra Radford. And like I said, the Lost Dutchman goldmine.com.
Yeah. So it seems like it's cursed for sure.
Something weird is going on. Do you think there's actually gold?
I mean, I think if there were gold at one point, it's probably not there anymore.
People, it says people have found it, but they've disappeared.
Right.
Yeah. Like, something happened to them.
It seems like a lot of very similar deaths to just be a coincidence. I mean, if you're really looking at it from a rational, scientific point of view, you know, it's at some point coincidence becomes not coincidence and becomes evidence of something else that's going on.
Oh, it's and so it's, weird.
You know, like, we don't know what else is going on, but it seems like there's something else going on.
Ooh.
Something creepy.
It's which one? One of them, like, ran. Who was it that helped out the Apache? Dr. Thorne, who helped out the Apache member. It also said that it was Geronimo.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, the person that he helped out.
Right.
But, yeah. That's all I got.
Very nice.
You can read and read and read about this if y'all want to keep going. There is a book about James Kidd called, I think it's called The Soul Truth or The Soulful Truth. And it's what came out of his fortune.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go team.
Nice.
Break.
Now we'll talk about some weird shit in the news.
Yeah, so Mario and I looked at this and we cannot not address
I'm sure y'all have seen this.
You guys have heard of it,
of course.
For sure.
So this is, of course, like the biggest story in the news right now, right?
Yeah.
It's the Turpin children.
Yes.
So David.
We're gonna talk about the 13 children who were found in a home shackled to furniture, malnourished, abused.
Right. So yeah, David Turpin and Louise Turpin apparently had been keeping their children in, you know, basically captivity for, I don't think we even know how long.
They said that they moved into the house in 2014.
But clearly this had been going on before.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, and they said, you know, that they thought they were all children, but even, like, the oldest son was, I think it was a son, was 29.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the other ones were close to that age. They thought they were, like, 15 or, like, 12.
Yeah.
Like, they were so, it breaks my heart, they were so emaciated and so. And I remember there was one story where a neighbor had seen some of the older ones putting Christmas tree lights up. And, you know, just being a neighbor, just came up, you know, and said, hi, you know, how are y'all doing? And they just froze. And they would not talk to them. They were just, like, looking down and, like, we're not supposed to talk to people. And the neighbors eventually just walked away. But that was one of the very few instances that I read about where, like, anything was actually noticeable, which is the other really weird thing about this. Like, their backdoor neighbor said he never saw anything. He didn't even know they had kids.
What?
Yeah. And there were 13, a total of 15 people living in this house, the parents and the 13 kids.
I saw the interview with the sister of the mother.
Right.
And she was all like, oh, I pray for their salvation, this, this, and that. She was crying, and she was talking about how they, for 20 years, they had been trying to get in contact with her, and they couldn't. They never could. Yeah. And then this happens.
Right. I also saw some really strange pictures. So apparently the couple,
I was trying to look for pictures.
So apparently David and Louise have redone their vows, like, three times or something, including in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And all the kids were there. They went to Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah! I saw a picture.
Right, all the kids' faces
are blurred out. Yeah, their faces are blurred out, but they're all wearing pink.
Yeah, and they said that, like, on Facebook, like, they posted stuff. It was all about their religious stuff, and they looked like a happy family. Yeah, not so much. Kids were being, like, shackled to a bed and starved and whatever else. You know, I don't think we even know half of it probably at this point. But that just seems so weird to me, like, that dissonance between their public persona and then, like, what was really going on.
And they're saying, they're talking about sexual abuse, too.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I would not doubt that. I think it's one of the cousins or sisters of the dad said that he used to, like, watch her in the shower.
Ew.
When they were younger. Yeah. Ew. So I've heard a little bit about, you know, kind of a history of that sort of stuff with these people.
There was an interview. I didn't watch it. There was an interview with the Elvis impersonator who's there at Vegas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, wow. During their vows. Uh-huh. And, like, he was, like, talking to the kids and stuff. I didn't watch the video. I should have. Because I didn't really understand why there was an Elvis impersonator. And then I, like, read the story later about how the vows and stuff. That's why I didn't click on it at the time.
Mm-hmm. But how it actually came out is pretty interesting, too. Like, the 17-year-old daughter, I guess, found, like, an old phone that was totally deactivated.
Yes.
And she ran out of the house and...
She escaped through a window.
Through a window. That's right. And a good thing to know, like, this is actually, like, a pretty good piece of information. Even if a phone is completely without service, mm-hmm. you can call 911.
Yeah.
911 will always work, as long as it's got charge. So she called 911, and they were rescued, and, I guess they said when they came into the house, the mom was, like, confused as to why the police were
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also very weird and creepy.
Maybe they just, like, are so deep in there psychologically that they think this is normal or something. Also,
who knows?
Man, they are ugly. Oh, my God. The dad, he is so gross looking. Oh, my God.
He's very weird. He's got, like a bowl
haircut.
He's
got, like, a bowl cut. Ew. He was, so gross.
He looks like that weird child that you'd see in a playground, but a adult. Like... It is kind of, I mean, if it weren't so crazy and tragic, it would be funny, right? Like, he looks like a SNL character or something.
He's gross.
I don't understand.
So here's what happened. They ended up being tried for 12 counts of torture, 7 counts of abuse of a dependent adult, because 7 of them were adults over the age of 18.
Right.
6 counts of child abuse or neglect, 12 counts of false imprisonment, and they said the dad could possibly be accused with... It was something that had to do with sexual abuse, and they didn't know. But they're on, like a $9 billion bond or something.
Yeah, they're never gonna get out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was reading somewhere, that they're probably gonna face life imprisonment charges. And I would imagine they'll plead no contest or guilty because, I mean, there's no way they didn't do this. Like, clearly, we the police went into the house and saw it happening. So, that was definitely the weirdest thing in the news right now.
I can't wait for the documentary.
Oh, there will definitely be a documentary.
In 10 years.
And there will definitely be a Lifetime movie.
And, yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Those kids, I just want to see their recovery, and I want to see them be okay. Like, that's,
you know what?
What
I bet they're going to be fine.
I think the human spirit,
and, like, especially children, you know, are able to just, like, overcome so
one
much.
One of them was 2.
I know.
A little baby.
I know. The whole thing breaks my heart.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, I really believe, like, that they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And, like, their parents are going to... fine, you know, they're going to be held to account, and, you know.
And it seems like they have a nice family. They have relatives who care for them. That's what it seemed like.
That's what it seemed like.
But, I mean, you never really know, I guess.
No, but I hope so. I mean, it you're right. It seemed like the rest of the family was not as crazy as they were, for sure. So, yeah, weird. Weird shit.
Sad.
Weird, sad. Sad shit.
Anywho.
Yeah, well, that's, another MMT in the can. I'm just going to steal sign-off lines from all the other podcasts I listen to. So that's going
to
be...
I don't want to do that. We have to make up our own.
Okay, but for now I'm going to say... Good job on you, Chloe!
Oh, my God. Maybe... Ew!
That's stolen from Cousin Sal on the BS podcast, Bill Simmons. Yeah. Great.
Stay Sexy, Don't Get Murdered? That's not ours. I love them. We're going to go see them sometime.
I hope so. Karen in Georgia, my favorite murder.
We're going to go see them.
The bestest podcast.
The bestestest.
Yeah.
Destest.
No.
Okay. Yeah, subscribe.
Please do subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating. We're going to be up on Patreon soon, so be looking out for that. And yeah, bye.
Bye.